Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
No joke, I think I might have a cane sauce problem. I was at Raising Cane's the other day getting my box combo with extra sauce on the side like usual. I have an order. When I eat my Cane's, it goes crinkle cut fries, chicken fingers, the Texas toast, and finish strong with the slaw. So I start eating, and before I know it, I'm scraping the bottom of my sauce, and I wasn't even done with my fries yet. This habit is escalating, and I'm 100% here for it. Dip into Cane's. Get extra sauce for me, please.
Well, welcome back to Zero Block 30, man. Like, what a great week that we had with the response from Connor's story about PTSD and how we're dealing with depression and suicide issues. It's not easy to tell those stories, and Connor did a great job. And I've for one, and have been really appreciative of the feedback. And what's really struck me is how many people who like constantly make the qualifiers, I'm not a military dude, but I really enjoy Zero Block 30. And I feel like even though we're talking about military issues from a military standpoint, or really social issues from a military standpoint, it really applies to everybody. Like if you're struggling with depression, that's something that you need to take to the bank, is that somebody cares about you and that we want you to get help and get the treatment you deserve.
Absolutely. It really was a special episode. I know I can speak for myself, and I think I speak for you too, Chaps, when I say we were really proud of that episode, you know, be able to tackle a serious topic like that. And just the feedback we've gotten is unbelievable. So many nice tweets. I've gotten a shit ton of DMs, and you kind of touched on it a little bit. It seems like everyone feels the need to say, like, I'm not in the military or I never served, but it's like, listen, you know, just because we served in the military, you know, our PTSD, depression, suicide, whatever, it stems from that. But that's just one of the many ways that you can end up with PTSD, depression, suicidal thoughts. So I appreciate everyone reaching out to me, and I'm trying to do the best job we can responding to everyone. But it really is very nice that so many people felt comfortable reaching out to us after that episode.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we got big time from them is people thanking us for a service and thanking us for being outspoken. And, you know, like, I feel like this is, it's cathartic for me, and I know it's cathartic for you. And I'm sure mm-hmm. last week was definitely cathartic for you and sharing it with your family and things like that.
Yep, big time.
And I feel like that, and it's odd because I talked about it last week when I said that I feel like the public will experience phases of war fatigue. Well, I kind of got the opposite impression based on our mentions on Twitter and the interactions that we got. And then somebody asked me, what questions or topics should civilians avoid with veterans? And the example that he gave was like, how many people have you killed? I 100% think that, to me, that's the same thing as asking a pregnant woman or somebody who you suspect to be pregnant, are you pregnant?
Yeah.
like, just don't do it, man. Like, that's not a good idea. One, because if you have killed some people, it's not something that you're going to want to talk about. And if you haven't, like, does that really mean anything? Like, it really doesn't, you know?
Yeah, does that make me, or, you know, my deployment better or worse if I killed people? Does that make me tougher, weaker? I don't know, but you're right. It is certainly, I think that's on top of the list of questions you should probably never ask a veteran for the reasons that Chaps mentioned. Because there's no real right answer. There's no good answer.
There really isn't. Like, no matter how, and it seems kind of like an oxymoron because we asked Rob, like, we had Rob on because of who he killed. Unless the person is suspected of killing Osama bin Laden, then you can stay away.
Yeah.
Like, if you're like, is that Rob O'Neill, the dude who killed Osama bin Laden? Maybe you can ask him. Like, but for the normal Joe Schmo guy or Jane Schmo guy, like, just stay away from those questions. Yeah. Another one you might want to avoid is, do you have PTSD? Just asking somebody straight up if they have PTSD probably isn't the most wise of decisions.
Have you ever been asked that?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, I have too. I have too. It's
like to the point where somebody asked me, I was wearing, I guess I kind of stepped in it. I was wearing a Wounded Warrior shirt, like not actually Wounded Warrior shirt, but like from the Wounded Warrior Battalion that they mm-hmm. give out. And somebody was like, oh, I see that you're a Wounded Warrior. Do you have PTSD? And I was like, what the fuck, man? Like, there's not many questions that kind of take me off my feet. But that one, the first time I got it, was pretty out there.
Yeah, because that's also one. There's no real good answer. Because, I mean, up until last week, I don't know that I was very vocal with a lot of people about having PTSD. So the person probably just doesn't want to talk about it. And then you just make the rest of the interaction uncomfortable. So, yeah, steer away from that one, too.
And I'll tell you why they don't want to talk about it. Because you're a fucking stranger.
Yeah.
Like, if it's your buddy, like your pal or something, like your friend, like I think that that's an okay question and a fair question to ask. Like if they feel like you're struggling, because sometimes putting people on the spot can really like jar some things and make it real, make mm-hmm. you realize some stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you're pumping gas next to somebody and see that they have a Purple Heart on their license plate, probably not the best time.
Yeah. Now, on the flip side, people are probably thinking, like, well, Connor, what the hell are you talking about? You just volunteered that information, and that's just it.
But you volunteered it.
I volunteered it because I feel comfortable speaking to you, and, you know, it was something that I just wanted to get out there. So that's why I volunteered it. But don't ever be the one to ask. Not a good look.
Yeah, they want – and that was another question that I was asked this week. Like, if I suspect my family member of having PTSD, how should I go about that? And I honestly think that the way to do that, if it was me, my preferred way would be written. Yeah. If you take the time to write a note to me and send it to me or hand it to me so I can digest the fact that you suspect this away from you, I'm not going to be as volatile or as confronted if you're saying it to me in person, if I'm kind of on the fence, you know. But if you write it down, like, hey, I noticed these things, I know you've experienced some stuff, I wanted to think about it, and if you ever wanted to talk, I'm here for you.
Yeah, because being put on the spot definitely makes it uncomfortable. And then also if you write it down, because I was really racking my brain. I didn't really at first know how to answer that question, but I think that's the answer. If you write it down, put the ball in my court, to say, all right, if I feel comfortable in approaching you about this, or maybe I'll write a letter back. Maybe that's the way to go about it.
Even say you don't ever have to answer back. Like, I just want you to know I'm thinking about you, and if you need a shoulder or you need an ear, like, I'm here for you.
Yeah.
I feel like those kind of statements mean a ton to people.
Yeah, thank you so much to all of you who said that to me. You know, like, if you ever want to talk, and obviously – you know, we've never met, maybe except for a few interactions on Twitter, but I really appreciated that. And that goes so much further than you may realize. And it is not hollow. It is taken to heart. And that's really the best way to go about it.
Yeah, I agree, Connor. And I mean, just because you told your story to last week and everybody really latched on, it was a great story. And it showed a lot of courage for you to talk about PTSD and suicide and things like that. But one thing Zero Block 30 is about is showing the lighter side. And just because there's sometimes a dark side doesn't mean that it always is that way. And we wanted to bring on a dude who is going to show a little bit of a lighter side. So let's do that. All right. So welcome to Zero Block 30, to a stoolie of a long time, a dude that lives in Nantucket. He's a former 0351. Which I'll let him get into that, because just like when Connor explained what being an artillery dude was, I don't want to step on anybody's dick, so I'll let him talk about what that means. But he lives in Nantucket now, and seems like a salt to the earth guy, which Prez would say, just because he's a Nantucket real estate agent. How you doing, Mike?
I'm good, guys. How you doing?
We're doing well. Really happy you could join us and figure out how your phone works.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's no big deal.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I've listened to a few episodes, guys. You guys have done an awesome job so far. Really.
Well, we don't retweet compliments, but thank you very much.
We don't do those compliments. Yeah, yeah. So wait, Mike, they let Marines on Nantucket? I wouldn't think they would.
Why is that? It's not all liberals, dude.
It is kind of ridiculous that you went from like Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton to Nantucket. Can you admit that just for half a second?
Yeah, it was a big change, dude. It really was, but, you know, it's all good.
That's where you were at, was Pendleton. You were at Pendleton, right?
Yeah, I was with 3-1, so we were on Camp Porno at Pendleton.
Pendleton is either the nicest base in certain parts or the fucking worst in other parts.
Dude. Yeah, Horno's a shithole.
All the enlisted barracks there, man. Like, if you want, like, traditional Marine Corps barracks where – dudes have their dicks out just smashing terrible beer all day. Like, their rooms flooded for – it's not even raining, but their rooms are flooded somehow. Like, it hasn't rained.
Cluttered. Like, flooded. Riddled with mold. It's fucking disgusting. It really is.
Like, how did you guys get mold poisoning in the most beautiful city in America, in San Diego? Disgusting. Like, well, we don't really know, but it happens to, like, 90% of us.
Yeah.
So are you from Massachusetts? You're a Mass guy?
Yeah, no, I'm from Nantucket. I was born and raised out there. I live in Boston now, but I grew up out on Nantucket.
Okay, and I read that you own a bar, right? You own a bar?
I have a company. It's called Boston Raw Bar Company. So we put on, like, oyster bars, the small catering company.
Oh, very nice.
We put on, like, oyster bars for weddings and, like, corporate events and private parties and shit.
So before you were giving people food poisoning, what was it that you did in the Marine Corps?
so I was an 0351. So we're grunts. We're basically like the demo specialists for infantry battalions. You know, we're the retards that they trust with fucking demo, and we carry around these heavy-ass rockets called SMAs. So we're basically just glorified grunts that carry C4 and TNT and big-ass rockets.
Very nice.
Yeah, man.
So whenever you were deployed, what's a typical day like for an 0351?
Well, I was deployed to Helmand Province in 2010. Pretty shitty time to have been there. But when I was deployed, we were doing a thing. It was called the ink blot technique. So they put small squads at small patrol bases, and we just do, you know, security patrols. So we basically lived in small villages, just a squad of Marines and like five or six ANA. And we do security patrols about three times a day and just stay in a shitload of posts, dude. It's terrible.
And just have like the shittiest life in the history of the world.
Yeah, it was pretty fucking bad.
Especially in Helmand Province.
It was 141 degrees one day by my thermometer.
That's not hot.
Yeah, that's pretty warm. So I think I said it on part of my take that, like, there's a style of cooking called soy vide. And if you put, like, so you put, which means in French, under vacuum. So in
whoa. You're giving me shit last week about dropping some Latin, and you're coming here with French this week?
Yeah, man. So if you take water and you submerge, like, chicken in, like, a Ziploc baggie and put it in a porta potty when it's 141 degrees, if you come back an hour and 30 minutes later, it'll be the best chicken you've ever had in your life.
It's called poaching, chaps.
It's not called poaching. It's called soy vide, my friend. Poaching would involve steam.
I just dropped some knowledge on you.
Let's put it this way, dude. It was so fucking hot that I watched an Afghan, you know, I'm sure it's the same in Iraq. You know, they have the worst diet that they – All the people had diarrhea, right? Chats, you've had diarrhea since 2006.
Yeah.
I watched a dude, and for some reason they shit in front of you. Like, it's no big deal. They just, like, pop a squat, shit.
Well, right, dude, once you've had diarrhea control your entire life, like, having diarrhea is no big deal.
So this guy, he fucking comes up. I'm taking a security, you know, pause. I'm taking an AA just providing security. This guy comes up, shits 10 feet in front of me, right? And it was so hot that the shit was – it was boiling. The shit was bubbling. How hot it was. That was like my moment of, like, clarity where I was like, what the fuck is going on here? This is so weird.
What am I doing with my life?
Yeah, what the fuck is happening?
So you had several different things during your deployment that was – pretty outrageous, and one of them happened even whenever you came back, right? So you were getting ready to get out of the Marine Corps, which I don't know, like, for the people who are listening, I don't think that the general public really understands the sheer joy that is the 2 or 3 months before you get out of the military. Like,
it, worse.
When you know you're gonna do it for sure, you're just like, oh my god, I cannot fucking wait. Is that how you felt?
It was the fucking worst. So for, like, people that aren't, like, familiar with the military, anyone that's listening, like, and especially for me, when I got back from a deployment in June and I got out in September, so everyone knows for that 3 months, you're not reenlisting. You're getting the fuck out of my Marine Corps, devil. You know? So everyone's fucked with you, and you've got to fill out
and you
so
are
much
getting,
paperwork.
You're getting hoed out, basically, by everybody.
Yeah. So they just put you on, like, if you're getting out, they just fuck with you constantly, make you do this.
Because they don't care.
Shit.
They know that they don't have anything to lose, so you're just going to work. They're going to get the rest out of your ass that they possibly can.
Yep. So we did some pretty stupid shit my last 3 months. And, you know, we pretty much, you know, on my deployment, my second deployment, we were on a Mew. And, you know, all the Lance Corporal Underground and the Corporals, we had a huge falling out with our chain of command. So when we got back, it was time to play fuck games. So
when you do stupid shit, does any of that involve breaking anything?
Yeah, I just had quite a few Rush Limbaugh mugs. Yeah.
So tell us about your Rush Limbaugh story.
So this is funny. This was literally my last week in the Marine Corps. And my dad came out from Nantucket. He flew out to Pendleton, and he stayed in the barracks with us for a week so he could drive cross country with me. So literally my last week in the Marine Corps was spent smashing Rush Limbaugh mugs. We smashed about 5,000 of them. Rush Limbaugh, he's got this company. It's called Tuith by Tea. It's a tea company that him and his wife started, and they're big, like, donors to military organizations. So they make all these care packages that were supposed to get sent to Afghanistan, and somehow we got, like, 5,000 of these care packages on Camp Horno. And I don't know who it was, but, you know, someone in my chain of command, I think it was pretty high up, decided that these care packages were too political.
Right.
This is in 2012, so it was, you know, right before the Romney Obama election. So they felt these care packages were too political. So they had us go through every care package and smash all of the Rush Limbaugh mugs and rip all the T-shirts apart. And this literally took 3 to 4 days of smashing these mugs in a building and sweeping them up with brooms and dumping them in dumpsters. It was the most fucking ridiculous thing I've ever witnessed. And the best
and
part
I
was
feel
my,
like...
dad, my dad was there, who is the biggest Rush Limbaugh fan on the face of the earth, and he was fucking beside himself.
He had tears in his eyes?
What's that?
I said he had tears in his eyes?
Oh, dude, he was literally beside himself. He couldn't believe what was going on.
I feel like that's the perfect story because there's no reason to smash them. You can give them away. Yeah. Like, you could give them to, like, Goodwill in the area. You can give them to people that are less fortunate. You can give those T-shirts away to the homeless. But we don't think that far. Like, in the military, it's just like, these are not good. Let's fucking smash it, burn
fucking
it.
Smash.
Yeah, like, what can we do? What's the most violent way we can get rid of coffee mugs? Fuck it, smash them and just make the lower enlisted clean it up.
And I'll tell you what, dude, smashed porcelain is not white, and it is like glass. So all our hands look like we've been punching out windows for fucking a month. It's ridiculous.
Sounds like
but
fun.
That's life, especially – that's the perfect working detail for somebody that's getting ready to get out, man.
Oh,
like
yeah.
You live the exact right life at the right time. Because nobody else is doing that shit. Just the dudes that are getting out and the dudes that have fucked up recently because they don't care about you at that point at all.
Yeah, I mean, you hear some stupid stories, but definitely the guys, the infantry battalions, they have the stupidest fucking working parties. It's not even close.
Yeah,
we did some
like why we had
shit.
Some dudes that would have to go like police call, like pick up all the different piss bottles around the fobs, and I mean, there's so many places to piss, like. So many stories involve piss and break and stuff. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I was talking to PFT before we jumped on, and he put it very well. He said this is basically just like slave labor, right? I was explaining it to him, and he said, "So it's just cheap slave labor." I said, "Actually, yeah, that's really well put. That's basically
exactly
I feel like
what it is.
Slave labor. I would classify it as indentured servitude
because
that's a good point.
You work for a very small wage." Doing ridiculous stuff with the hope of freedom on the horizon. So I feel like that's what being a junior enlisted Marine is like, is indentured servitude.
So make sure you head right down to your local recruiter and sign up.
Yeah, man. I hope this is making people want to serve their country for sure. But there's also not many jobs that you can smash cups all day. So it's stupid while you're doing it, but it's not that bad. Like, it's better than picking up dog shit or something. Well, I guess I picked up dog shit for a good portion of my enlistment too, so I can't say that. Well, thanks for coming on, Mike. We appreciate it, man. Hopefully you're doing well. Keep kicking ass and doing good things outside of the Marine Corps.
All right, boys. I appreciate it. Keep up the good work, man. It's really a good podcast. A lot of guys from my platoon are digging it. So
great. Awesome, man. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
All right, boys. You too. Thank you.
I think that goes into another thing that we wanted to talk about, where when people say thank you for your service.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you constantly get that question. I get that question probably more than any other question surrounding veteran affairs. Should I say thank you for your service? To me, I love it when people say thank you for your service.
Yeah.
Because I know what people who were in Vietnam and the Korean War went through when they didn't get that. And for me, for thank you for your service almost to become to the point where it's trite, I feel like is a blessing, really. Like, that we have to deal with it, that people thank us too much for their service, where people get tired of hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I hear a veteran say, oh, I don't want to hear it, I'm tired of hearing that. Like, dude, first of all, fuck off, man. Like, people are just trying to be nice. Like, have a little bit of humility and just say thank you. Like,
yeah, that's what it is. It's just people trying to be nice. I think some people feel it's necessary. It's not necessary. If you don't tell me thank you for my service, I'm not going to think anything differently of you. Like, oh, that dude's a douchebag. He didn't say thank you for the service the first time I met him or the first time he found out I was in the Army. It's not a big deal to me, but just like you,
there is no obligation to say it, exactly. But it's appreciated when you do say it.
Bingo.
So, yeah. And that kind of goes into stolen valor. How do you feel about – and so what I mean by stolen valor is, a lot of times, especially if you're like in military circles, you'll see these videos of somebody who's dressed in military uniform. They're dressed inappropriately, so it's obvious that anybody that spent longer than 6 hours at a MEP station knows that they're not actually in the military. And they'll wear medals, they wear ranks, and things like that that they don't deserve. How does that make you feel when you see it?
Well, I mean, obviously it's a little upsetting, but I think it's a product of the fact of our society being so overly grateful towards us for serving. So I think some people, and they're wrong for thinking this, or maybe they're homeless and they're desperate, that they think, well, if I say I'm a veteran, I'll get a better response because people seem to want to go out of their way for veterans. And that just doesn't sit well with me, because I don't want my profession, just like I don't think anyone would want any profession, to be exploited in such a way that there's preferential treatment for people that didn't necessarily earn it. So it's a tough, very touchy subject, because I think you're also demeaning all of those people who didn't come back. And
so
you're using the loss of them as a way to make personal gains. So that's really shitty, in my opinion.
So when you see somebody that's like on a YouTube video, and there's like a dude who just got out, or like maybe he's still in, and he's like essentially screaming at the person in like an airport for wearing a uniform that he doesn't rate, like, what? How does that make you feel?
See,
do you support the guy or no?
I support the intent. These people who want to like put it on video and shame the person, I don't think that's going to help that person. I think you need to pull them aside and say, hey, listen, let's talk real quick. Leave your phone away. There's always this instinct nowadays, put everything on your phone, video, and throw it on the internet for whatever reason. Just pull the person aside, because I think that would make them feel less of a man or less of a woman if you pull them aside and just say, hey, listen, I know what you're doing right now, and you're an asshole for doing it, so stop doing it immediately. That's how I would handle it.
I kind of agree with you to an extent. Like, I feel like the person that's doing that, the person that has, quote, stolen the valor,
mm-hmm.
like, say they're in an airport, what are they really going to get out of it? What is it really harming? Like, it's not harming anything.
Mm-hmm.
When I see the dudes who put it on video, the first thing I think is, hardo!
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Dude, like, why do you have to be so ate up and so
It's almost like, look what I did. Look what I did.
Yeah, you're so braggy that you're trying to diminish another person and completely humiliate them in front of hundreds of thousands of people, because that's what your intent is. Your intent is for the video to go viral. And I think about the person who would do that type of thing, that would do a stolen valor type action. They're probably really going through some shit anyway.
Yeah.
If the best thing that you can have is to act like or pantomime that you were in the military, you've got some really serious issues going on. If you're striving after that thanks to the point where you're going to go to an airport and risk that type of interaction with others, that guy is, or that girl is probably really going through some mental shit. And you being a dude, and usually the type of dudes who do this stuff are usually bigger guys. They're really ate up. They're loud. They're braggadocious. They're kind of like the one man thrill ride that we play on Barstool all the time. Like, that's that dude who does that.
Yeah.
And to me, there's really no reason. Like, there's no reason to embarrass somebody who's already embarrassing themselves.
Mm-hmm. And I,
because you're not the only, you're not the only one that noticed it at the airport, you know?
Absolutely. And I think you hit the nail on the head too. I feel like it's a lot of times it's guys who probably didn't accomplish all that much while they were in the military. Not that they, you know, you have to accomplish a ton of stuff while you're in the military, but did maybe less than others, or maybe weren't the best soldiers, or they weren't the best Marines, but now they feel like they have to be the police for the rest of us and run around and catch these stolen valor people, or give a hard time to someone who, like, you know, a store that doesn't offer a military discount. Like, it's okay. Like I said, like, not everyone has to be rolling out the red carpet for me just because
right.
I went and I chose that profession. It wasn't something I was forced into do. I made that decision. So then are we supposed to support everyone who makes every decision in their life and volunteers to do something? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like tough. Stolen Valor to me is important when you're defrauding the government.
Yeah.
If you're trying to get, like, VA benefits or I have a huge issue with it at that point.
Absolutely.
But if you're just trying to sit outside of a gas station and maybe get somebody to give you some free gas, I got bigger things to worry about, man. And
exactly.
I hope that if you're a veteran and you see somebody doing that, I hope you have bigger things to worry about. Because in the grand scheme of things, it really, really doesn't matter.
No, that's a great point, too. Like, there's bigger things to worry about than some guy looking for some high fives or some praise.
Like if you're a dude that's running for political office and you're claiming that you have medals that you don't,
yes,
that's an issue.
That's a problem. That's a problem.
But if you're a dude that's at the airport that's trying to board and groan group B instead of group C,
yeah.
I feel like that's a huge deal, man.
I'm over. Like, you have at it, Chief.
Yeah, man. Take your 6 Purple Hearts that you have lined up in a row instead of a silver star on it, and take your happy ass and load your carry on into the overhead bin before everybody else.
Yeah.
Congratulations, man.
I'll wait till the next group boards.
Yeah, I'll just go to my poor person group 4 and get in. So speaking of poor person, whenever you're first enlisted or your first brand new officer, you don't have a whole lot of money.
No.
But what you do have is a whole lot of family members who are hyped as fuck that you were in the military and they want to send you shit. They want to send you letters. They want to send you sometimes you'll get the Jane Doe letter, like the breakup letter. Sometimes they just want to send you that. Or sometimes they want to send you dildos. Or sometimes they want to send you just the weirdest shit to get you in trouble.
Yep.
So what's the weirdest thing that you saw somebody get mailed?
Well, you hit it. Sitting in the talk.
What's a TOC?
Well, a TOC is a tactical operations center. It's just where you do all the planning and you monitor everything, everybody that's out on a mission during the day and night, for that matter. And so just one of the specialists that was in there, he's opening, because that's where all our mail went. So he's sitting there and he got a package. He hadn't gotten a package in a little while, and I guess his buddies back home felt like he was lonely and needed some entertainment, so they sent him a big dildo. I don't know what he was supposed to do with that dildo, but we all had a good laugh. So if his friend intended for us to all laugh at their buddy, mission accomplished. So that's probably the weirdest one. And then, you know, I definitely saw, like, don't open packages in front of other people.
Especially not people who are senior to you.
Exactly. Because guess what? Like,
if it's a peer group, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. But if I see a PFC open a package in front of me and there's women's panties in there, I'm going to get inquisitive and ask him why. And what do you wear women's underwear? Is that from someone else? The questions start flying. So just as a good rule of thumb, if you're, you know, a lower enlisted soldier, you're getting ready for a deployment, open your packages in private if you can.
Yeah, take them bad boys to your room.
Yeah. Did you see
anything? My personal favorite ones was, and I still do it, like to people who are in my family or friends that I knew that joined after, I always send them packages and increase their rank 3 or 4 times.
Oh, so, yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one. Explain that.
If you have a dude that's getting ready to graduate like Marine Corps boot camp, everybody when they get out of Marine Corps boot camp, they're either a private first class or a Lance Corporal. Those are the first 3 enlisted ranks. I always send something to them with either Staff Sergeant or Gunnery Sergeant on with their name and wherever they're going to be, because it just – you go through fucking hell, because the person who gives it to you usually is going to be your platoon sergeant or your company gunny who's like passing out mail at evening formation. And they're going to give you this, and they are going to be irate that they're going to assume that the person that did it lied about whatever rank they are. They're not going to think that it was the civilian who sent them something that was fucking with them. No. So if you want your nephew or whoever, your nephew or niece to do some extra push-ups or some extra running one night, increase their rank by 2 or 3 folds. Yeah. And it's beautiful. And if you need help, if you don't know, contact me or Connor, like DM us and tell us what rank they are, and we'll tell you what rank to put on the package.
Yeah. I definitely saw some things get addressed to generals, which is just preposterous. So I think those people knew and they were messing with them. But yeah, if you bump up a few ranks, they definitely just assume that that's what you're telling your family and friends, because they don't know any better. They don't understand the rank structure. And I've definitely seen some serious PT sessions after improper
rank.
If
you really want to fuck them up, this is probably pretty fucked up and it might be too far. We might have to cut this. But if you're good at Photoshop, Photoshop a different rank on their shoulders.
Ooh, yeah, that would be real good. That'd be real good. No, but that was definitely a good question. People were like, oh, what should I, if I'm sending a care package, what should I send? I didn't really see too many care packages sent to my unit when I was in garrison. And when we say in garrison, that means we're not deployed. But when we are deployed, some of the best stuff is just the simplest stuff, especially if you're on a more remote base where you can't get access to things. I mean, just things like toiletries, like a toothbrush, baby wipes, or dude wipes.
Baby wipes, fucking huge, yeah.
Dude wipes, send
dude
wipes.
Products, yeah.
Dude products.
And shower those wipes.
Yeah, those are fantastic. We used to, you know what we used to like to get, and I don't know if I'm going to hurt myself here, but we used to enjoy getting the, like, trash magazines, like People and Us Weekly, because they were quick and easy.
Dude, yes, man. Right? When we were in outside of Fallujah, constantly, man, when somebody would get a brand new People magazine or Us magazine, I would be fucking stoked.
Yeah.
Dude. Like, what's Tara Reid getting into?
Exactly. Why is Jennifer,
like, I think I was there when Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt broke up. Oof. And I was like, what the fuck, man? Like, I got to get more information about this.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's just a complete opposite. I mean, our lives over there are so serious and so regimented. So you're just like, all right, just give me some smut. Just give me some bullshit gossip that I can take
some
to the
smut,
shitter.
Man.
Yeah, you just need that smut. Just
I
so
wish
I can...
Portnoy was still there handing out his fucking newspapers outside of the the little bread hut in Fallujah.
Funny enough, and I guess maybe I'll tell Dave this at some point, that's when I first discovered Barstool. It was 2008 when I was deployed. Someone sent me a link to Barstool, and it was just in Boston at the time. We just need something simple that really doesn't take a lot of brain cells, because you're so focused.
Mindless entertainment, yeah.
Yeah, mindless entertainment, because you're so focused on everything else that's going in your life, and it's so serious that I just want something stupid to read. So
baby powder is huge, because your balls and shit get so chafed up.
Yep. Tobacco.
When you're walking a lot. Yeah.
Tobacco products.
I mean, if you send American Copenhagen,
yep,
and by the roll or skull or whatever, if you send those in logs, the service member that you have that's deployed will be everybody's favorite
mm-hmm.
person in the world, essentially.
Yeah,
especially
absolutely.
If it's fresh Copenhagen, like, people will shit themselves about getting that.
Yeah, I don't know about.
Also, if you want to be sneaky, get the brown Listerine
ooh.
With the razor blade cut around the outside. take it off, take off the top with the seal, fill it back with whiskey after you rinse it out, put the plastic back on top of the lid, use your hair dryer really close to seal it back up so it's sealed back up, and that way it gets through customs. So your service member in a combat zone has whiskey.
That's some MacGyver type shit, dude. No one ever sent that to me.
Way to be an officer, dude. You're showing the difference between officer and
president. But that's impressive if people did that for you. That really is impressive.
Oh, my God, dude. The night after I got shot, like when I got out of the hospital, I was stumbling through Camp Fallujah drunk as fuck because I hadn't had alcohol in like 6 months or so. And I lost like 50 pounds. And then I went straight from that to whiskey and I was fucked up. It was awesome.
Yeah, and I don't think we need
to. Very much against the status of forces agreement.
Big time, yeah. Well, I mean, that's what people don't realize. Like, there's no booze over there unless you're sneaking it. The only booze I saw on my deployment was for the Super Bowl. Everyone got – they have what we call near beer over there, but you know, basically non-alcoholic.
Beer, too. Like on special occasion, you get two.
So you get regular beer, you know, like Budweiser, Heineken, something like that. I wouldn't say I was angry or upset. I was just like, I'm not going to drink two beers. What the hell are two beers going to do for me? Because what's the point?
Well, that's when you got to be creative and tell people that you'll do their chores and shit.
Well, that's
it. They'll give you their tickets.
Yeah, that's it. You give your beers away, and you know, to your buddy, and then he's collecting a few from some other people. Next thing you know, he's got 12 beers. And all right, that's a party.
And he could drink 12 beers like 8 months ago, but after being in the desert for a couple months and not drinking, it's amazing how your alcohol tolerance like goes down so much.
Yeah. You know what though, in terms of alcohol tolerance, I think that's as much mental as it is physical, personally.
No way. No, no, no. That might be our biggest disagreement on the show. No, dude.
I don't know.
Absolutely not.
Dude, I feel like I can go sit at a bar and be intent on not getting drunk and have 12 beers or 15 beers or 20 beers, whatever, and feel one way versus if you and me go to a bar and we're like, yo, we're going to rip it up tonight and I have those same amount of beers, I'm going to feel completely different. And I stand by that.
Let me just say this. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but that's just stupid.
All right, well, that's how it is for me. So that's what I'm sticking to. So screw you.
Whenever I'm drinking a nice whiskey or a nice full body red like I had before we started the show, I could sit on my couch and my wife would never be mad at me. that's just not the way real life works.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think, you know, depending on your company, if people bring out some more emotion out of you, like, I think that makes you more drunk. I got to imagine there's some science behind this. I'm going to look into it just to prove myself right.
Science of emotion?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. But I guess basically, if you're looking for stuff to send, just send stuff that they can't get over there. Like, you know, just American-type snacks. Anything that can last a long
beef
time.
Jerky.
I was just going to say beef jerky. But yeah, the tobacco is a big one. You can get cigarettes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Obviously not American as easily, but the Copenhagen.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Copenhagen is where it's at.
Yep.
And don't forget the Us Weeklies.
Yeah, send a lot of Smut Magazine, Maxim, all those things.
Yo, and if anybody...
I don't even know if I'm allowed to say Maxim on the Barstool Network, but we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah. I'll tweet out some pictures of my office from Iraq. We had Maxim magazine, Sports Illustrated. We would take those out and then wallpaper my office wall with all of those.
Yeah, because people are jerking it anywhere they want to and everywhere they want to.
Basically, but yeah, if anyone chirps at us and says that you were idiots or you know we're pansies for reading Us Weekly and People, you're a liar because you like that stuff too.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I don't know a single dude that was deployed. Even the hardest core guys were loving Smut magazines. And not even Smut, just like mindless. It didn't have to have girls. Like it'd
exactly.
Just be like straight up celebrity news and you were fucking digging it.
Yep, absolutely.
So I guess while we're on the topic of deployment, one of the questions that we got from one of the dudes on Twitter was, what was the weirdest thing that we saw our guys doing or that we did while we were deployed? You got one? Let me go first.
I'm going to start with a tame one, and then you can go, and then I'm debating whether or not I'm going to say the second one.
All right.
But we used to get into eating contests.
Okay.
Because I think.
Like guys, buttholes or.
No, not buttholes. Not that I saw, at least.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
That's, exactly. You, if that's what you're into, go for it. We don't judge.
The No Judge podcast. No, no judging on.
Not at all. But no, you know, guys in the military, I think, just in general, are a fairly competitive bunch. And you really, I mean, you run out of shit to do quickly when you're on a deployment if you're not out on a mission. And I can remember the one that stuck out the most was the honey bun challenge and just who can eat a honey bun the fastest. And, I mean, yeah. I saw guys choking just because they were just desperate to win.
Can I interrupt you?
Yeah, go ahead.
If I see a fucking honey bun now, it makes me want to puke, dude. Like, I hate Otis Spunkmeyer muffins and I hate honey buns. With the fire of a thousand suns.
Good old Otis. Good old Otis. But yeah, those were very readily available, so that's what we did. We had Honey Bun Challenge. And you know, next thing you
did
know.
Did you warm it or no?
No, no, no.
Were you allowed
straight
to warm
out the,
it?
No, you weren't allowed to warm it. It was straight out the package. And then yeah, next thing you know, guys are getting odds. I mean, there's money being thrown around. It got to be pretty serious.
Well, it's a serious thing.
It
I
is
mean,
a
you don't just fuck
thing.
Down with a honey bun.
Exactly. So the Honey Bun Challenge was probably the most intense thing I saw to pass time. What about you? Was there anything weirder or more intense?
Well, the maddest I ever saw one of the sergeants that I worked with was when the Honey Bun Challenge was going on, and a young Lance Corporal tried to warm the honey bun.
No, you can't do that.
And the sergeant, like, called into question his integrity and, like, like
yeah.
all kinds of stuff, man. It was like a like the sergeant took it as like a direct assault on him. Like, get, like, how dare you in my presence while you're in my platoon try to warm up this honey bun for 25 seconds to make it soft. Like, mm-hmm. we don't cheat. Like, Marines don't lie, cheat, or steal. So don't you better fucking approach this honey bun conversation with a little bit more honor in your nasty little body.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was my experience with the honey bun challenge. But my grossest thing actually was done by your boy. Like, I actually did it. So
great.
So we used to go – like, you know, Marines were on our feet a lot in combat zones. We actually liked to hunt places.
Yep.
So we had came back. I had been gone out on a mission for like 9 days. So 9 days, no shower, only eating MRE. So your shit is thick as a fresh Wendy's Frosty.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It doesn't move. It feels like a very warm Tootsie Roll. Like, it's just as hard as a rock. So you can't really wipe because you have no toilet paper. You're just a disgusting individual. You come back. You've been wearing what we call silkies mm-hmm. underneath your flight suit, like your fire retardant outfit. So you come back after all those days of hiking and moving, sweating your asses off, where you're drinking basically a gallon of water a day to stay even. So you can imagine what your clothes smell like. So I had just walked back into the compound where the military working dog handlers stayed. We all stayed together before we were, like, basically hoed out to all the different units on base that needed a working dog handler. Mm-hmm. I was working with recon the entire time, and my buddy, he also worked with recon, so we had our own little hut. So usually when I came in, he was going out. So it was basically like you had your own room, which was a huge benefit for anybody that's ever been deployed. Like, you know, having your own room is – like, unheard of, especially in the enlisted ranks.
Oh, yeah.
So I walk in. My clothes are sweaty as fuck, like, drenched in sweat because I had to walk back to base. Like, we walked back after getting on the Humvees. We walked back in, and I was sweaty as fuck.
How far were you walking?
I don't know. Probably average 6-7 miles a night. Because we only really operated at night, so easily 6-7. But that's when it's still over 105 degrees, 110 degrees at night. So I walk into our little compound, and in my bag, I would always keep a pair of basketball shorts. So as soon as I got back into my compound, I would strip down, mm-hmm. put on my basketball shorts, and then go eat, and then go take a shower. Okay. And so my silky shorts were completely soaked in sweat. And these are the same ones that I had wore for like 8 or 9 days. So my roommate, Rich, was in there. And I was like, hey, dude, on my way in, I picked up our laundry at the laundromat. Because we had like a laundromat on base that we could pay people to do it. So we always took advantage of that in Fallujah. I don't know if they had that in other places. But so I did it. And I was like, they put a new thing. It's Old Spice laundry detergent. And he was like, what? He's like, that's awesome. I was like, yeah, it smells really good. It's really nice. Uh-huh. I was like, here, smell these. And threw him the shorts that I had been wearing for like 8 or 9 days. So he's prepped and takes them and puts them like 2 inches in front of his face. And it's all nothing but nut sweat and butt sweat for like 9 days of combat operation.
All that good old Chaps butter.
Yeah. So he takes it in his face. It takes like the biggest sniff of all time and just fucking starts like puking right away. It wasn't even like he dry heave like Feidelberg a few times whenever he sees him doing chaw dogs. Mm. It was like right away puking. And it was the most proud I've ever been in my entire life. Like, there's two times I've been really proud. One, when I got pinned the Purple Heart with my daughter carrying her. And two, when I made Jake Rich puke in our Kwanzaa hut in Fallujah, Iraq from just the smell of my nuts.
So there you go. That's the answer to the question. That's what we do to pass time. We see if we can make our friends puke.
Yeah, and he wasn't even mad. That's the great part.
Yeah.
He loved it. He was like, oh, my God, dude. You got me so good, man.
Yeah, no, if he was pissed, that'd be a great sign to just stop being friends with that guy.
Yeah, if he was pissed, it'd be really fucked up. Like, yeah. You can't get mad about that.
No, not at all.
So, yeah.
Oh, well.
So there we go. That's fucking deployment stories, man.
I have some other, not a passing time, but I have a pretty good deployment story that involves, because you mentioned earlier, piss bottles. And if you want to just,
we can. No, just, I'd never cut it off if we're going to talk about piss. Let's do it.
All right. So in a lot of places, the place, whether it's a latrine or a porta potty or something, it's not where you're living. So in order to get to it, you have to actually, put all your gear on, go outside, walk there. It's a big production. So there's no running water in any of these countries. So we just have these big 1 liter water bottles that we use for our water. You can use for washing.
And they are fucking everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just pallets and pallets of these things. I don't even know where they come from. There's just always.
But they're everywhere.
There's
like
pallets of waters everywhere. So what you would do is, you know, as I'm sure anyone who's ever been on a long road trip and you don't want to stop, you use these bottles to urinate in. And most people don't get uptight about it, but there are some people who it grosses them out, especially if you have, like, Jesus, in my office, there were times there'd be, like, 8 bottles apiece, me and my office mate just sitting on our floor, and eventually we'd throw them out, but, you know, they just pile up. And our commander was not a fan of piss bottles, especially in the tent where we lived. So we had the higher enlisted.
Sounds like a real jerk.
Yeah, he was. We had nicknames for him and everything. We'll get into that another time when we talk about bad leadership. But so we had the higher enlisted, like E7 and above, and the officers living all in one tent. And me and my buddy Rob were on either side of one another. And one morning, our commander is walking by. We'll just call him Captain Brandon. Captain Brandon's walking by my buddy Rob's bunk, and Rob's got probably like 6 piss bottles next to his bunk. Not from just that night, just, you know, accumulating over time. And for whatever reason, he was in a bad mood, and he decided to wake Rob up and said, you know, Lieutenant Dwayne, are those piss bottles? And Rob had just come off like a 48-hour patrol. He was tired. He had just gotten back maybe an hour or two ago. He had just gotten to sleep. So he was not in the mood to deal with Captain Brandon. So he says, no, sir, they're not. He goes, oh, they're not piss bottles? What are they? And Rob just kind of like groggily was like, it's lemonade, sir. He goes, oh, it's lemonade? And before he could say another word, Rob grabs one, untwists the bottle, takes a pull of his own piss, puts it back and says, yup, Roger, lemonade, goes back to sleep. And
wow.
Then Captain Brandon left him alone.
What do you do?
What do you say to that?
It's piss. You can't fuck with a dude who willingly drinks his own piss.
That's how tired he was.
It's a dire situation.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's something that I want to add. All these survival shows like talk about military dudes drinking their piss. I never fucking drink my piss, man. Like, I've done some pretty cool shit, but I've never drank my own piss. I'm not gonna drink my own piss.
Well, I guess that.
I mean,
I guess that means I should probably.
Well, I've been drunk enough where I take like a bath and. like you get kind of like a semi and you kind of end up pissing in your mouth if you accidentally pee and if you drink too much.
So I guess that.
Can we cut that, Coley? Let's cut that part.
But I guess that means I should probably tell my own piss story.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you said you never drank your own piss. So well,
can we say that? Let's save that for next time.
All right. Yeah, that's a good story. I got to tell that story.
That's a good lead in for next time.
Absolutely.
Well, like I said last time on Zero Block 30, we're not going to talk about just heavy shit. And this week we stuck with primarily light stuff. And I feel like that gives you a good example of what military dudes are like. Even though Connor went from last week talking about his story of his struggles with depression and suicide and PTSD, tonight he ended the note on talking about a story where he was drinking his own piss and joking about other people drinking their own piss. So I feel like that gives you a good insight to what we're really like. It's not a one-note thing. Just because somebody struggles with PTSD or suicide doesn't mean that's the only person that they are. We're more than that. You're more than that if you struggle with depression. You're not just one-note person. You're the colors of the rainbow, even if you aren't gay, because everybody's beautiful. So
that was beautiful, what you just
said.
I know,
that was a nice soliloquy, right?
It really was. And I don't even think you practiced that.
Did you hear that I said soliloquy too?
Yes, I did, man. That was another big word for an enlisted guy like you.
I know. So I spoke some French, said soliloquy, and talking about making people smell my nuts to the point where they throw up.
I mean,
I feel like that was the perfect podcast for Zero Blood.
You gotta go out like Costanza. That's it. I'm going out on top. I'm out of here. It.
Well, that was episode 6, and we're finally done with the podcast. So thanks for everybody for listening. And make sure if you're on Twitter, follow Connor at Captain Cons. You want to spell it for him? I'm a terrible speller.
Yeah, it's just Captain, how you would spell it, CAPTAIN, and Cons, CONS. You might have actually heard Donald Trump mentioned me in his debate this past week when he mentioned Captain Con. He said he had a nice thing to say about me, so we'll drop that in so you can hear what Donald Trump had to say about me.
Oh, and also our buddy Mike that was on used retard in a sense that we don't usually use it, but that was real Marine talk, and that was how we do it. It's not exactly the most political thing in the world, and normally we wouldn't say it, but I wasn't going to cut him off when you do it. I don't condone the use of retard at this point in my life. So,
all right. I think that's all we got.
There it is. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you again next week.
Have a good night.